Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Why don't you tell us how you really feel, Jeff Blair?
It's the mantra that Dwayne Casey keeps repeating to his players, but it seems fitting for the rest of us as well. It's what he told us last night. Each night is a different story. That's what he tells the media. That's what he tells his players. And it sure is with this group. If it isn't Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan, it's Lou Williams off the bench or Terrence Ross exercising some playoff demons over Paul Pierce or Chuck Hayes, Mr. Human Cholesterol himself, clogging up the other team's offensive arteries. We're asking the question this morning, how good are the Raptors? Right now, they are the best team in the East. But are they really the best team in the East? Really? Like, I've said it all along. I think the road to the NBA Finals goes through Chicago. And Cleveland and Miami can't be counted out either. But look at those teams. They all have exploitable flaws. And if Derrick Rose goes down, and it's already happened this year, it's going to happen again, all bets are off with the Bulls. The fact is, there is no more hegemony in the Eastern Conference. There's no unscalable mountain for any team, not just the Raptors. Perhaps the best news is that there's still room for this team to grow. Jonas Valanciunas still doesn't finish out enough games for our liking, and Terrence Ross takes spells off. But the Raptors don't lose at home. They don't lose when they lead after three quarters. And as Paul Jones is about to tell us, they have had through 14 games a better killer instinct when it's late and close than any other team in the NBA. Are the Raps the best in the East? Right now they are. The question we're asking you this morning is, will they be the best in the East at the end of the season?
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
This is one of those songs you better get talking before the lyrics kick in. The Toronto Raptors survived a late run by the Phoenix Suns last night. A tremendously entertaining game at the Air Canada Center. I mean, most of them have been entertaining this year. The Raptors survived a run by the Phoenix Suns, went on to win. And, Paul Jones sent me sent Travis McKenzie, actually, my producer, an email this morning, just about half an hour ago when he knew he was coming on, that I think kind of puts the rap season so far in perspective. And you know, one of the things about this team I find really interesting is every now and then, you know, you read the game notes. You read the game notes that Jim LaBombard and the Raptors PR staff puts together. And you know how you can tell when a team is good? When there's stuff in the game notes that make you go, I didn't know that. The more times you see the word Elias or the more times you see some reference to a stats agency in game notes, this is the first time since blah, blah, blah that this happened or this is the first time since blah, blah, blah. That generally means you're having a good year. The more nuggets in the game notes, the better the season. So Paul Jones dropped a little information on us this morning. I'm going to bring him in right now. Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm going to turn the floor, so to speak, over to Mr. Jones. Give me that stat you dropped on us.
I was going to say, your fun meter's like way up. It's on high, man.
I know. I'll tell you something now.
Jeff, seriously. The run right now that this team is on is really capturing and recruiting the casual fan on the periphery. Like, I'm going to the grocery store and people are like, hey, what about the Raptors? I'm like, dude, who are you? I've been coming to this grocery store for 10 years and you've ignored me. Like,
I got a very quick story I'm going to tell. And I hope I don't get anybody in trouble. But
as long as it's not me, we're good.
No, it's fine.
Don't be down to the vice principal's office.
No, it was the game against Memphis. And for people who don't know, the press seats, the writer seats are kind of in the corner of the Air Canada Center. And it's right near a service area where a lot of the you know, the concession staff go through. And there was a game against the Grizzlies where, honest to God, for like the final 2 minutes, the concessions guys were standing there screaming and cheering. And I thought it was so cool. And one of the security guys came over and he just said, you know, oh, these guys are having fun. Let them go. It was remarkable. I've never seen that at an event before.
It's a nice run, and but you know, in the words of Dwayne Casey, we haven't done anything yet. And here's a guy who's got a championship ring, and helped put a championship banner up in Dallas. So until you've got one of those, you haven't done anything. And I think that's what's keeping this team focused. And Jeff, I mean, I'm with you. I'm prepping for the game. I have all these stupid little notes that, you know, just in case, and you know, a backboard breaks, or you know, we're out in Calgary at the Naismith Cup and they have 12-year-olds wiping the floor because the condensation's coming through, and you need stuff to talk about just in case. As little brother has always told me, fill the bucket, you never know when you're going to have to empty it. And mm-hmm. I have been tracking like shooting percentages since 06-07, and the one that I started to look at last year when NBA.com had all these filters you could run on close games, and Dwayne Casey talked about end-of-game situations, and I used to get, we all got the tweets from fans second-guessing coaches, and I'll never forget one of my first broadcast partners, Bob Hill, former coach of the Spurs and, mm-hmm. and the Knicks and the Pacers, said, Jonesy, you think if a fan hasn't thought of it, I haven't? And he said, the coach has options, and just because he picks the wrong one, everybody thinks he didn't know the other ones. And we used to get those tweets about Dwayne all the time, and he knew what he was doing. He just picked what he thought was the right option for his team, and he said he was going to concentrate on end-of-game situations. Last year, the Raptors were 9-17 in games that were plus or minus three with a minute remaining. And they committed the most fouls, had the second most turnovers. This year, they're the only undefeated team. Now, they haven't had that many close games mm-hmm. playing well, but they're 4-0 in games that are plus or minus three with a minute to go. And, you know, they're top 10 in fewest turnovers, top 10 in fewest fouls committed. All of these things that were problems for them last year that, you know, they always say that the good teams find a way, and they weren't quite a good enough team to find a way. They're finding ways. Last night they let that lead go, and years ago other Raptor teams lose that game. It gets away, and we're talking about how can, you know, a comeback happen like that. And I, as sick as I am, I came home last night, and at 2:00 I watched the game again, and you know, from the time that Chuck Hayes, I love that, human cholesterol clogging up the other team.
I'm determined to come up with a nickname for Chuck Hayes.
You better talk to Chuck about that one, though.
Yeah, that could be taken both ways, couldn't it?
After he made that layup, and he missed another short one, the Raptors went 12 possessions with a total of 12 passes. And that tells you where the ball movement went and mm-hmm. what allowed Phoenix to come back. And then, you know, they make a couple of big plays at the end. And here's, you know, people talking about, you know, Dwayne and the plays at the end. Well, they called a screen and roll, a 1-2 screen and roll with Lowry and DeRozan. They get the switch, so now DeRozan's being guarded by Bledsoe. He starts to back him down. And teams have, coaches have demarcations on the floor where you double team, where you don't double team. And DeRozan was in one of those areas where you probably shouldn't double-team, below the foul line, inside kind of a trapezoidal area. And Gerald Green came up. Somebody left. I don't know if it was Gerald Green. One of the guys came up. It was Markieff Morris. Mm-hmm. Comes up, and now that frees up Patterson. DeRozan, great look, finds him. It probably could have been a three-pointer, but Patterson missed the shot, and he made the free throws. And then on the next play, Lowry finds a way. He deflects, as you teach the little guys, you teach guards. He gets a deflection on the crossover dribble, knocks it away. They control the jump ball, and there's your ball game. And this team's finding a way right now, Jeff. And I you know, you talk about different guys. I heard your opening with whether it's Lowry or Lou Williams or Terrence Ross or Chuck Hayes. They're reminding me of a true team. That's what we said Toronto always needed to do because they couldn't get, quote, stars, unquote. And they look to me right now kind of like the 03-04 Pistons, which is the right guys, everybody playing their role, and at some point somebody will do it depending on who it is and what the situation calls for.
Paul Jones joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. We're taking your calls at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590, asking the question, are the Raptors the best team in the East? Well, they are right now. I guess the question is, will they be there at the end of the season? Paul, the Suns team that the Raptors were playing last night, good bench, great bench, real good in the fast break. They're exactly, well, are they the type of team that down the road will give the Raptors more trouble than a physical team? Because we used to talk about how even last year and the year before, how the Raptors would be susceptible to a team coming in and starting to throw their weight around. If you're Dwayne Casey right now, which team would you rather face, a physical team or a team like Phoenix that just gets out there on the fast break?
You know, I think the physical teams scare you mm-hmm. more because of their style of play. A Chicago, you know, teams like that are rough and rugged and mentally tough and play that, you know, physical playoff style game all year when they're healthy. I mean, you saw what Chicago did, and Toronto almost ran them down once they got past the point of, you know, appealing to the officials and started, they stopped playing the peripheral opponent, Jeff. That's mm-hmm. what beats you. You get into games where you're not getting calls and you start, you know, arguing for contact, and you play to get calls rather than score buckets and get things done. And you start playing, you know, in Pat Riley's words, the peripheral opponent. And once you get past that and tough it up mentally and decide, okay, and Lowry's the perfect guy for that. He does that at points in games. He did it in Cleveland. He just says, okay, enough. There's going to be no calls. All right, let's start going through people rather than around them or trying to go over them. And I think those are the kinds of teams that give them trouble because it fuels the most inconsistency in Toronto.
Jonas Valanciunas had 17 points, 7 boards in the first half. He finished with a career-high 27. Didn't see the floor a lot late in the game. The Raptors went small. I don't know if they've used Williams, Lowry, Ross, Johnson, and DeRozan together as a group that often this year. But, I, you know, a lot of people on Twitter last night were saying, hey, you know, Jonas Valanciunas' career-high, it'd be nice if he could finish a game once in a while. And I wanted to ask you, Paul, I get where Dwayne Casey's coming from. You know, Phoenix is coming back, and they're doing it. You know, Phoenix is basically, it looks to me like they're a team of about 25 guards and 4 big guys. I mean, there's like a guard factory.
6-4 and under, the businessman league?
Jeez, exactly. But if you're a coach and your team is playing against a team like that and that team is mounting a comeback, at what point do you go to your big guy to be proactive? You know, like, I guess what I'm getting at is, okay, Phoenix is coming back and you know how they're doing it. Do you automatically try to shut them down by going small yourself? Or is there something to be said for putting the big guy out there?
I think the game plan was great last night. They did a great job through three quarters and a bit of managing the pace by going inside. Plumlee was, he looked like a practice dummy out there. I mean, no disrespect, but he was standing there, and JV was going by him like he was practicing his moves in the pregame warm-up. And I think you really have to match up, Jeff. And you can go either way. And as I said off the top, it's all about, you know, your philosophy and you know, your philosophical outlook at how you would shut people down. And Dwayne has those options. I think what hurt them more was the fact that they went 12 possessions with 12 passes. Mm-hmm. They didn't move the ball. It didn't matter who was in there. I think that's what hurt them, and then they fell asleep defensively, allowing P.J. Tucker to step into open threes with nobody within, you know, 5-6 feet of them. Some of that could have been heavy legs, too. We asked Valanciunas about it, Eric and I, and on the postgame interview, 3 games, 4 nights, are you feeling a little bit? He said, yeah, but, you know, that's not an excuse. You got to play through it. So, look, if Valanciunas has to sit at the end of games because the matchups aren't there, and Dwayne feels that he's got a better matchup in going small, then that's what he has to do. He's also still a young player and maybe doesn't have that cachet with officials, and you're trying to get onto the good circle now of a team that finds a way and maybe getting more respect in terms of calls. So I just think the fans have to sit back, and Dwayne will decide you know, what's right? When does JV play and when does he sit?
What has to happen for this team, Paul, to win the East? And I know we're early. We've only got 12 games. And as Dwayne Casey says, they haven't really accomplished anything yet. But is it entirely out of the question that this group could win the East?
No, I don't think so. I think you have to be careful of the fact that they've had a run of home games. And you know, it's kind of like holding serve in tennis. And they've had home games, and they've played well in those home games. I mean, other than the loss to Chicago, you know, what's their record now at home? They're 9-1. So they're, you know, as Sherman Hamilton says, you know, they're creating a buffer. They're creating a, well, we're going to lose a few games here and there. We could lose 3 out of 4 or 2-3 in a row, but we've made up for it with wins at home. And look, this team won 22 games on the road last year. First time in club history they had a winning record on the road. So, you know, maybe it keeps going. And if it does, Jeff, there's no question they could win the East. There's a lot of people around the NBA looking at Toronto and Washington, returning people, familiarity, chemistry, and they're saying, why not? These two teams got experience last year in the playoffs. They're motivated and fueled by what happened in the postseason. Tim Kempton, the radio analyst for the Suns, a former Raptor, who's here on a couple 10 days, he said, you know, you bring guys back and you look and you see the same guys in the locker room beside you. Raja Bell in Cleveland, the director of player administration, said that when his runs in Phoenix with Nash and Stoudemire and Marion and all those guys, he said, we kept it together because we're playing for each other now. And I really think that's the way this Raptor team looks at themselves.
Yeah, and I had a chance to talk to Kirk Heinrich when the Bulls were in town, and I asked him that question as well, but just about the Raptors. And he said, he said the first thing is you've got to keep the group together. And he made the point, take a look at what they did last year in the playoffs. And his point was, why wouldn't you keep that group together?
Yeah, and that credit goes to Masai. And I look back, hey, Glenn Grunwald did it when Vince missed a buzzer beater in Game 7. He's like, and you earn that, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, whether it's baseball or hockey or whatever, when you're close and you're knocking on the door, and I'm not saying the Raptors were knocking on the door last year, but, hey, they sure weren't going in the tank like everybody wanted them to.
No.
And that group deserves a chance, bring the band back, deserves a chance to be together, and then you make little tweaks. And at this point, you know, the same way the good clubs make tweaks where San Antonio brings in a Patty Mills or, you know, like they rescue Boris Diaw off the scrap heap when he's cut from the worst team in the league in Charlotte. You make tweaks and you know, James Johnson, Lou Williams, the internal organic improvement from the guys that were there last year, working out this summer, working out together. Give the coaching staff credit too. Dwayne Casey, all of those guys, you know, Sterner, Nurse, Mermis, Jama, like, you know, Jamal McGlure, right down to the video guys, you know, like John Goodwillie, David Gale, like it, all of those guys, they're all back and they all know what the goal is. And I think they're off to a terrific start, but you're leading the marathon after the first mile, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jones, I appreciate you joining us today. Have a great trip to Atlanta. We'll see you Friday.
Okay, Jeff.
It's Paul Jones. He is a Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Raptors beating. I was going to say hanging on to beat the Phoenix Suns last night, but I don't really think that's fair. I think they just beat the Phoenix Suns. It was a pretty good game. And 104-100. You know what? 104-100, that probably reflects the game. It really does. And as Dwayne Casey said, every night is a different story, and the Raptors are winning games in different ways. The question we're asking this morning is, how good is this team? The best in the East right now. But is it realistic to think that they'll be there at the end? I mean, let's face it. Cleveland is not going to be as bad as they are right now. They got back on track last night against Orlando. 106-74. LeBron James basically put the team in his back after coming out and spending the past 3 or 4 days making statements, kind of calling into question his teammates. He called his own performance into question before the game. And then, of course, vintage LeBron James went out, put the team in his back. They beat Orlando 106-74. Miami's still awfully good. I mean, they really are. And as I said often, the Chicago Bulls, I think, have, well, they certainly got the best passing front court in the NBA. They have the, I think they have the best starting five in the NBA. Now the question is, the key component of that starting five, Derrick Rose, is a 50-50 proposition to go on most nights. I keep calling him Yannick. Joakim Noah, I really date myself. Joakim Noah is still on a minutes limit, a little bit of a minutes limit with the Bulls. So it's, they're not firing on all cylinders yet. And I'm not certain if Tom Thibodeau is necessarily the guy you want monitoring minutes for players. He seems to be the type of guy that if it's working and he's winning, now we'll just keep on it. Just keep with it. But look at Cleveland. Their bench is awful. I mean, it is not even in the same stratosphere as the Raptors. Miami? I think Miami of those three teams is probably the one with the best chance. But they have no point guard, as Travis McKenzie points out. And I've already dealt with the Chicago Bulls. Healthy, they're the best team in the East by a mile. Healthy, they might be one of the top two teams in the division. So there isn't that dominant roadblock standing between the Raptors and the Eastern title. They are the best team in the East right now. Will they be at the end of the season? They could be. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590, George in Toronto. You're on the Jeff Blair Show. The Raptors are the best in the East right now. Can they be the best in the East at the end of the season?
Yeah, hi, Jeff. I absolutely think they can be the best, and not only because of their record, because like you guys said, I mean, they had a lot of home games, but I mean, they're taking care of business, and the reason I do think they're the best team is because, okay, Chicago does have the best five starters, but the Raptors have two things that I don't think any other team in the East has, both of, which is the amazing chemistry and the very deep bench they have, which, I mean, they won all the games when they had two of their good defensive guys out, Tyler Hansbrough and James Johnson, and they won all those games. And I just think that, like, the Wizards have the chemistry, but they don't have the depth. Cleveland has the talent that the Raptors have, but they definitely don't have a bench like us. And when it comes to Chicago, I mean, yeah, if they're healthy, I think they're the one team that could give us a run for our money. But I still believe that until they show me otherwise, to me it looks like they are definitely the best team in the East, Jeff.
Yeah, the other team that we overlooked, the team that's kind of a little bit like the Raptors, and we've got to remember, actually got farther in the playoffs than the Raptors did last year. The Washington Wizards, and once Bradley Beal is up and running and good to go, that team's going to be awfully good as well. But I guess the way I would look at it is at the start of the season, if somebody had said to me, "What should the Raptors be aiming for? Getting in the playoffs again and maybe winning a round, or maybe challenging for the Eastern title," I would have said, "Whoa, just get in the playoffs, win a round, build on last year." Now I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things to be cautious about with this team. Paul Jones pointed out, they've had a lot of games at home. Let's see what happens in December when the World Junior Tournament takes over the Air Canada Center and these guys go on the road for six or seven games. Let's see what happens then. But look who they've beaten. Look how they've beaten the teams. And the stat Paul Jones ran out. The stat Paul ran out about the Raptors close and late. In games where they're leading or losing by 3 points, going into the final minute, they're 4-0. Early, admittedly. But last year they were 9-17. That's a product of a better bench, obviously. I would say that in some ways it's probably a product of Lou Williams. But that's a telling stat. The Raptors have turned the ACC into a fortress. The Raptors don't lose at the ACC when they're leading after three quarters. And they're closing teams out. These are all signs of a team that can be really, really good. And I don't see anything that tells me it's not sustainable. I really don't. Injuries, obviously, can have an impact. But unless it's something catastrophic, for example, with Kyle Lowry, take Gravis Vasquez for a game or two, I'm okay with that. DeMar DeRozan's their best player. DeMar DeRozan hasn't exactly been the dominant player in a lot of these wins, has he? He's played well, and what I really like about DeMar is on nights where the shot isn't falling, he's figuring out other ways to win. But they've won without DeMar having career games. There are a lot of things you look at this team and you go, as good as they have been right now, there is room for improvement. The caller made an interesting point about no James Johnson or Tyler Hansbrough as well for the past couple of games. Nathan Thomas, I got Chicago 1 and Raps 2. Am not sold on Raps beating healthy Chicago in a 7-game series because of their half-court defense. Mike Tan on Twitter. And again, you can join the conversation. Use the hashtag Blair Show. In years past, the Raptors would have folded and lost a game like last night. They are good, not great. Yet this team needs a stopper. He wants Bruce Bowen. If there's an area that kind of concerns me a bit. It's Terrence Ross's game. I don't see enough consistency. I don't see enough attention to detail and defense. I don't think it's a matter of effort. I just don't see enough attention to detail a lot of times. Rocky and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Can the Raptors are in first place right now. Can they keep this up towards the end of the year?
It's very possible because right now the East is wide open. And if you know that if you want to have a winning culture, it's all about depth. And when Masai Ujiri made that blockbuster trade with Rudy Gay going to Sacramento, it was they built some depth with Vasquez and Patterson. And now when they, with the addition of Lou Williams, they probably have the best depth when it comes to guards. Another example is Phoenix. They also have a depth with guards because Tyler Ennis is pretty much like the fifth or sixth guard in that team. So I really believe that depth is one thing, and if you want to see this as an example, look at the Spurs. They have stars in their team, and the way they beat out Miami last year in the NBA Finals came down to depth, and depth is what makes you win games and win playoff games and win championships. So
you know, I also think it's not just a matter. Thanks for the call, Rocky. It's not just a matter of having depth. I think the way the game has been officiated now. And the way the game is played now, you really need to have that depth in the guard position. You need to have a little bit of depth when you're talking about having an ability to go small, which the Raptors do now. Lou Williams is such a good complimentary piece. I admit, when Masai Ujiri got Lou Williams, a lot of people, Paul Jones is one of them, said, hey, this guy can be a great bench player. I'm going, okay. But he is such a good complimentary piece. And as I said, there was a time last night in the fourth quarter where the Raptors put Lou Williams out on the floor along with the starters. They went small. They went Williams, Lowry, Ross, Amir Johnson, and DeMar DeRozan. And it was an interesting dynamic because they hadn't played together an awful lot during the season. And it just showed, I think, the options that Dwayne Casey has in front of him. And keep in mind that Tyler Hansbrough's hurt. You know, the other aspect of last night's game, and it gets lost in the first half, in Jonas Valanciunas' production, but Patrick Patterson played 12 minutes, got no points, but he had like three boards. I think he had four boards and three assists. They were quality minutes. Didn't score. I don't even know if he took a shot. He may have taken one shot. But they were quality minutes. Same thing with Chuck Hayes. And that's what I mean about Dwayne Casey having options. Last year, having a guy like Tyler Hansbrough out may not have, early in the season, would have been a real issue for this team. They have a lot of options, and they can pretty much play any way. The next step, I think, for this team is for Jonas Valanciunas to be able to finish out games. And that's not just a matter of staying out of foul trouble. It's more a matter of consistent defensive effort and basically forcing Dwayne Casey's hands, basically saying to Dwayne Casey, you have to have me out on the court late in the game because I give you a better chance of winning. That's the next step in the maturation of this team. I think that's the one missing component. I don't know if they... Masai Ujiri could conceivably make another deal to address an issue in this team, although they're right up against it with the salary cap. But I think they've got what they need internally. It's just a matter of that development from Jonas Valanciunas. Paul Dawkins, Raptors are built for the regular season. Don't trust their half-court offense and playoffs, too perimeter-oriented. Again, though, that gets to my thought about Jonas Valanciunas. The goal this year ought to be getting Valanciunas ready to go at it in the Eastern playoffs with the big boys. Tim and Waterdown, you're on the Jeff Blair Show. Raptors are in first place. Can they keep this up?
Yeah, well, let's manage a few expectations. How's it going, Jeff?
Good, man.
Good. I love it when you talk Raptors. It's almost a highlight of my day. But anyhow, I think we really need to manage expectations here with the Raptors. No, I do not think that the pace that they're on is definitely not sustainable.
Okay.
Sherman Hamilton, like what Jonesy said, was that they're creating the buffer, and that's great because they're going to need it. The reason being, rebounding. You hit the nail on the head when you talked about Jonas Valanciunas finishing games off. Well, he's their best rebounder,
mm-hmm.
and if the shots aren't falling, we have a perimeter-oriented team, and with that said. You have a lot of guys who are taking shots from the outside. You know, DeMar does a great job of driving it into the lane. However, again, when the shots aren't falling, when you only have one really good rebounder, which is Valanciunas, he's got to stay in the game he's got to be in there at the end of the game. And you know, I'm not sure what the stats were yesterday in terms of rebounding, but I can pretty much guarantee you that. In about three quarters of the game so far, they've been out rebounded.
I'm going to tell you kind of a funny story. I'm glad you mentioned the rebounds. Dwayne Casey yesterday after the game in his post game media session, and I wrote the line down. You know, he was talking about going back to his whole story about the Raptors winning in different ways, and every night's a different story. You know, he said one night we outscore teams. One night Kyle goes off, has a great game, he wins. One night DeMar has a type of game he can have, Lou Williams has a type of game. Then he paused and he said, maybe one night it's going to be rebounds. But what he was talking about is, as a coach, a lot of times you worry about how do you know that your team is growing? How do you know that the message you're giving is getting through? And it's not just simply a matter of looking at the standings and going, hey, we're 12-2. This team is buying into what I'm selling. What was really interesting was Dwayne Casey spoke at length last night about finding a different way to win every time. And you're right. There are still too many games where this team gets out rebounded. But I honestly believe this. That the answer lies within. You look at the players on the bench, you look at Jonas Valanciunas, there has to be a time where this team does not get out-rebounded. And I really believe this team, as great as Kyle Lowry has been, as great as DeMar DeRozan has been, as outstanding as Lou Williams has been, this team will only go as far in the playoffs as Jonas Valanciunas will let them. His development is absolutely crucial to making inroads in the East. I think it is the most important aspect of this team the rest of the way. Any time is a good time to talk to Scotty Bowman. Unfortunately, he will join us today to discuss Pat Quinn, who passed away yesterday at the age of 71. A contemporary Scotty Bowman's. And I think a guy whose abilities as a coach, I mean, Pat Quinn gets talked about an awful lot as Pat Quinn the person, which is great. Which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. Pat Quinn the hockey guy, which is even better. Nothing wrong with that. I really want to know more about Pat Quinn the coach. We had Glenn Healy tell us some terrific stories yesterday and really, I think, give us a sense of what Pat Quinn was about. Scotty Bowman, senior advisor of hockey operations for the Chicago Blackhawks. Is there anybody on the planet who knows more about coaching and knows more about winning when it comes to the NHL? Scotty Bowman, the great Scotty Bowman, will join the Jeff Blair Show when we continue on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're back. We've got a couple of tickets to see the Bills play the Cleveland Browns in Buffalo on November 30th. And you get exclusive pregame hospitality as well at the Rogers Tap House. And guess what? After last night's 38-3 win by the Bills, and by the way, are the New York Jets the worst excuse for a professional sports team you've ever seen in your life? Here come the Leafs callers. No, I'm just kidding. Anyhow, we've got a couple of games to give or tickets to give away to see the Bills and the Browns play. That game has implications, has positive implications now for the Bills. As a result of that win, they beat Cleveland and they've got a little better chance of getting in the playoffs. They still have to play Denver and Green Bay though. So, I mean, those playoff hopes will probably last for about a week, but at least you can say that you were at a game the Bills may have won and increased their playoff chances. And who knows, maybe Brian Hoyer gets hurt. You get to see Johnny Football as well. So we're going to give away a couple of tickets to see the Bills and Browns on November 30th, but not right now. We're going to give it away later in the show. So if you want those tickets, you're just going to have to keep listening. I may give it away like that. I may just give it away when the spirit moves me, or give them away when the spirit moves me. Pat Quinn passed away yesterday at the age of 71. A lot of people on this station, a lot of people on Sportsnet talking about Pat Quinn, reminiscing about Pat Quinn. The stories, not surprisingly, legendary. This was a guy who was a big player. He was a big man. He was a physical presence. And there was an awful lot of empathy about the guy as well. We heard Glenn Healy yesterday in this show telling some of the stories about Pat Quinn and how Pat Quinn and Healy remembered one story in particular where Quinn pulled up a chair in the middle of the dressing room and started telling a story about strategy that the British had used in the war. And Healy talked about looking over at Sergei Berezin and saying, this guy doesn't understand a word that Pat Quinn is saying. I want to know more about Pat Quinn, the coach. You know about Pat Quinn, the person. But I want to know more about Pat Quinn, the coach. And as I said, when you want to talk about coaches, you need to go to a great coach to really get a handle on what a guy was all about. Scotty Bowman, who's senior advisor of hockey operations for the Chicago Blackhawks, and also, of course, a Hockey Hall of Famer. Best coach I know to ask this question of. Scotty, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Always a pleasure to talk to you. What was Pat Quinn like as a coach?
Oh, yeah, he's got a great record as a coach. You know, people often look at coaches, and I think the fact that, he kind of rebuilt two teams when you look at it. I go back a long time with Pat because, actually, I saw him play junior hockey, and that's how long ago it was. Mm-hmm. And then he was a Detroit farmhand at the time in the early 60s, and then he somehow went from Hamilton all the way out to Edmonton because they had both of that was their two sponsored teams. There's no draft in those years, so mm-hmm. he went out to Edmonton. They won the Memorial Cup, and then later on, in 1967, Just prior to the expansion draft, I was in St. Louis. Maybe a couple of days before, I was reading about it yesterday. We purchased his rights. I was with the St. Louis Blues. And somehow he never came to our training camp. We loaned him to Tulsa. Tulsa was a team in the Central Pro League that was really a development league for the NHL. And we loaned him to Tulsa. And subsequently, I guess they liked what they saw. The Toronto team traded for him. We were looking to get help for the playoffs, and we got Dickie Moore. We finalized the deal in March, and he became a Toronto Maple Leaf the following season. I think he played two or three years with Toronto. So I go back a long time with Pat, and of course I was with him at the end of his last year with the Hockey Hall of Fame. He was the chairman after Bill Hay had retired. But as a coach, look at his records, Philadelphia. I don't know if he rebuilt the team, but he definitely put a new culture into Philadelphia after they had their real tough teams in the 70s. Mm-hmm. People think what kind of a coach he was. He really liked skillful two-way players more than just guys that would play with a little bit of an edge. He liked players with an edge, but he liked to play two-way hockey. He just couldn't stand teams that only played defense. And Philadelphia, I think when you look at his records with Philadelphia, subsequently, when he went out to Vancouver, and as a lot of people remember, the team was really at the bottom. They were just about, I mean, they weren't even drawing any people. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, within two or three years, they were selling out. And then, of course, he came to Toronto. And I think the best years Toronto have had, really, if you look at their teams since the early 70s, Pat Quinn was running the Toronto Maple Leafs. He was able to get his hands on some decent players. They weren't stars, but they should have been in the finals a couple of times. They just got edged out subsequently with injuries. But yeah, his record. I think his record really speaks for itself when you look at what he did for Canada. Mm-hmm. He's probably the one coach of all coaches, of recent, say the last 20 years. Running their teams in the World Championship, the Olympics, and then going back into junior hockey. So he's done it all. He did it all, and I was glad to know him as a good friend.
I was. I'm old enough to remember those Blues teams, and I'm envisioning having Pat Quinn on the same defense corps with the Plagers. That would have been tough.
We acquired him from somehow Montreal got his rights. And just before the draft or something, we were able to buy his rights. I don't know how we did that, but it was only 2 days apart. But, yeah, I think he was – I'm not sure why he didn't come to our training camp, because he didn't come to our training camp, and then we loaned him to mm-hmm. like I said, and too bad we didn't get him, because he was a pretty tough player on the Leaf defense in 68, 69, and 69, 70.
Scotty Bowman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. One of the points Glenn Healy made about Pat Quinn is his ability to talk to players, to communicate with players at from different eras or different generations, I guess if you want to call it that. That may be stating that may be overstating it, but you know, the guy in his mid 60s takes over a junior team or runs the Canadian junior program, wins a gold medal. You know, Pat could relate to 17-year-old kids in 2006 and 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids in 1999. There's a real art to that, isn't there, Scotty?
Well, sure, because I think, look, it's like having a young racehorse. You know, you want to let him go. Pat didn't fill the players' heads with a lot of X and O's. He didn't, you know, it wasn't all about he and strategy. It was about motivation. It was about playing your best. And I think the players, and he got a lot of players, he had a lot of veteran players in the NHL that he would get from other teams and became real good players on their teams. But to go to junior hockey, it's a different kind of coaching. And, you know, you got these kids really anxious, and I'm sure they looked up to him. And I was at the tournament in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. I wasn't at the under-18 tournament, but I saw that tournament in 2009. When they had a miracle finish against the Russians, and I think Jordan Eberle had scored a goal with a few seconds left to tie the game and keep the hopes alive, and then they won the gold medal. But that was something to coach in all the different ages, and to get back to junior, and I never knew about the under 18 win as well, but I did know about the Olympics in 06, and then of course the 09 juniors. That was something, because that was probably the reason that he went back and started coaching again in the NHL. You know, it was a bad ending for his NHL coaching to go all the way out to Edmonton. The team was rebuilding. I don't know what they were expecting of him. He was just trying to mold them into some NHL players. And since that time, they've gone through about five coaches.
Yes, they have. Scotty, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for doing this morning.
I'm glad, and I wish his family the best. They're wonderful people. I knew his wife, Sandra, and my thoughts and prayers are with the entire Quinn family. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks, Scotty. As indeed are our thoughts and prayers. They are with the Quinn family. Scotty Bowman. I had no idea about Pat Quinn and the Blues. I can remember the 72, the Blues expansion teams. They had, as I said, they had the Plager brothers. They were just beasts. Tough guys from Kirkland Lake or Haileybury. I can't remember. I think it was Kirkland Lake or around there anyhow in northern Ontario, mining country. They were absolute beasts. Just the thought of having them in the same defense corps as Pat Quinn. Oh, God. We appreciate Scotty Bowman joining us. The Boston Red Sox making news yesterday, making news today. Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez signing with the Red Sox. News conference scheduled for today. Roughly, by my math, about $187 million worth of contract given out to Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval. Rob Bradford is the Red Sox beat reporter for WEEI in Boston. And he will join us to talk about the Red Sox moves, to talk about the next Red Sox moves. Somebody's got a pitch for those guys. Where does Hanley Ramirez fit in? Who are the Red Sox going to get to pitch for them? These, of course, are weighty issues that also will have a bearing on the Toronto Blue Jays season. Rob Bradford joins us next, going to talk a little baseball. And then Eddie Olchuk at 10:40. This is the Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.